Side 9. The Shining Ones. The Tomilly, Book 2. By David Eddings. Continuing on page 303.
Belium can confirm my truth, Sophronia,
Zanisha replied calmly.
And if I have broken faith by lying, Sir Colton stands ready to spill out my life. Put me to the test, sister. He told us that the serfs had been inflamed against our village by your people, by the Delphae. He lied unto thee, Sophronia. Great was his chagrin when he discovered that Aphriel and thou didst still live. Seizing upon the first thought which came to him, he did shift his own guilt to my kindred, knowing that thou wouldst surely believe the worst of those whom thou wert already predisposed to hate. He hath deceived thee since childhood, Sophronia of Ilara, and would deceive thee still, had not Annika forced him to reveal his true self.
That's why you hate the Delphae, isn't it, Sophronia?
Elana asked shrewdly.
You thought that they were the ones responsible for the murder of your parents.
And Zelasta, ever striving to conceal his own guilt, lost no opportunity to remind her of that lie.
Zanisha said,
In truth, hath he poisoned her thoughts against the Delphae for centuries, filling her heart with hatred, lest she question him concerning his own involvement.
Sophronia's face twisted, and she bowed her head, buried her face in her hands, and began to weep. Zanisha sighed.
The truth hath made her grief all new. She weeps for her parents, dead these many centuries.
She looked at Aileen.
Take her somewhat apart, gentle child, and comfort her. She hath much need of the ministrations of women presently. The storm of her weeping will soon pass, and then woe unto Zelasta should he ever fall into her hands.
Or mine, Vanyan added bleakly. Boiling oil is good, my lord, Colton suggested. Cook him while he's still alive.
Hooks are good, too, Ulof added. Long ones, with nice sharp barbs on them.
Must you? Sarabian said with a shudder.
Zelasta hurts Sophronia, your majesty, Colton told him. There are 25,000 Pandian knights, and quite a few knights from the other orders as well, who are going to take that very personally. Zelasta can pull mountain ranges over his head to try to hide, but we'll still find him. The church knights aren't really very civilized, and when somebody hurts those we love, it brings out the worst in us.
Well said, Sparhawk murmured.
We're getting a field here, gentlemen, Elana reminded them. We'll decide Zelasta's punishment after we catch him. When did he become involved in this current business, Zanisha? Is he really allied with Sirgan?
The alliance was of Zelasta's devising, Queen of Alenia. His failure in the forest of Astel, and his own guilt arising therefrom, did plunge him into deepest despair and blackest melancholy. He roamed the world, losing himself at times in vilest debauchery, and at times dwelling alone and hermit-like in the wilderness of this world for decades on end. He sought out every styric magician of reputation, good or ill, and gleaned from them all of the secrets. In truth, of all the styrics who have ever lived in the 40 eons of the history of their race, Zelasta is preeminent. But knowledge alone consoled him not. Aphriel still lived, and Sophronia was ever bound to her. But the knowledge of Zelasta, which is beyond measure, did suggest to him a means by which he might break those bonds. At the dawn of time, in far Thalesia, had the troll dwarf Gwerig wrought Belium, and Zelasta knew that with Belium's aid, might he gain his heart's desire. Then came the birth of Annika, signaling that Belium itself would soon emerge from the place where it had lain hidden, and by signs and oracles, and divers other means, did outcast Styrix perceive his birth, and counseled Dezalasta, instructing him to journey straightway to Eosia, to observe Annika throughout his childhood and youth, that he might know him better. For it was the hope of Zalasta that in the day that Annika did bring the flower gem to light, might he wrest it from him, and thereby gain the means to prevail over the child goddess. But on the day when the ring did come into Annika's possession, did Zalasta perceive his error? Well had the troll gods wrought when they guided Gwerig in the carving of the sapphire rose. Man is capricious and inconstant, and covetousness doth ever lurk in his heart, and trolls are but reflections of the worst in men. Thus did the troll gods make the rings the key to Belium, lest any or all have power to command it. Thus did Afriel disarm Gwerig by stealing the rings, and thus did she scatter the power of the jewel, that no mortal might command it. Thinking that their own power was absolute, the troll gods had no interest in the flower gem, and distrustful each of the others, they laid enchantments upon the stone to ensure that no one of them might take up Belium unless all did. Only in concert might they command it, and they contrived it so that they, as gods acting in concert, could command Belium without the rings.
She paused. Reflecting, Sparhawk realized on the peculiarities of the troll gods.
Now truly,
she went on,
the troll gods are elementals, each so limited that his mind may in no wise be considered whole and complete. Only when united, which doth rarely happen, can they by combination achieve that wholeness we see in the merest human child. For the other gods, however, it is not so. The mind of Azash was whole and complete, despite his maiming, and in his wholeness had he the power to command Belium without the rings. This, then, was the peril which did confront the Annika, when thou didst journey to Zemach to meet with him. Had Azash wrested Belium from thee, he could have compelled it to join its will and its power with his.
That might have been a bit inconvenient, Calton noted.
I don't quite understand, Talon said. The last few times he's used it, Sparhawk's been able to get Belium to do what he wants it to do without using the rings. Does that mean that Sparhawk's a god?
Nay, young sir,
Zanisha smiled.
Annika is of Belium's devising, and is therefore in some measure a part of Belium, even as are the rings. For him, the rings are not needful. Zalasta did perceive this. When Annika slew Gwerig and took up the Belium, did Zalasta intensify his surveillance, ever using the rings as beacons to guide him. Thus did he observe Annika's progress, and thus did he watch Annika's mate as well.
All right, Sparhawk, Elana said in a dangerous tone. How did you get my ring?
And what's this?
She extended her hand to show him the ruby adorning her finger.
Is it some cheap piece of glass?
He sighed. Afriel stole your ring for me, he replied. She's the one who provided the substitute. I doubt that she'd have used glass. She pulled the ring off her finger and hurled it across the room.
Give it back! Give me back my ring, you thief!
I didn't steal it, Elana, he protested. Afriel did.
You took it when she gave it to you, didn't you? That makes you an accessory. Give me back my ring.
Yes, dear, he replied meekly. I meant to do that, but it slipped my mind. He took out the box. Open, he told it. He did not touch his ring to the lid. He wanted to find out if the box would open at his command alone. It did. He took out his wife's ring and held it out to her.
Put it back where it belongs, she commanded.
All right, here. Hold this. He gave her the box, took her hand, and slipped the ring onto her finger. Then he reached for the box again.
Not just yet,
she said, holding it out of his reach. She looked at the sapphire rose.
Does it know who I am?
I think so. Why don't you ask it? Call it Blue Rose. That's what Gwerig called it, so it's familiar with the name.
Blue Rose, she said, do you know me?
There was a momentary silence as Belium pulsed, its azure glow dimming and then brightening.
Annika, Talon said in a slightly wooden voice, is it thy desire that I respond to the questions of thy mate?
It were well that thou didst, Blue Rose, Sparhawk replied. She and I are so intertwined that her thoughts are mine and mine hers. Whether we will or no, we are three. Ye two should know one another.
This was not my design, Annika.
Talon's voice had an accusing note in it.
The world is ever-changing, Blue Rose, Elana said, and there is no design so perfect that it cannot be improved.
Her speech, like Sparhawk's, was profoundly formal.
Some there are who have feared that I might imperil my life should I touch thee.
Is there in truth such peril?
The wooden expression slid off Talon's face, to be replaced with a look of bleak determination.
There is, mate of Annika.
The note in Talon's voice was as hard and cold as steel.
Once did I relent, and once only. After ages uncounted of lying imprisoned in the earth, I did permit Gwerig to lift me from the place where I had lain. This shape, which is so pleasing unto thee, was the result. With cruel implements of diamond and accursed red iron did Gwerig carve and contort me, living, into this grotesque form. I must submit to the touch of a god. I willingly submit to the touch of Annika, in the sure and certain hope that he will liberate me from this shape which hath become my prison. It is death for any other.
Couldn't you...
She left it hanging.
No.
There was an icy finality in it. I have no reason to trust the creatures of this world. The death that lieth in my touch shall remain, and also the lure which doth incline all who see me to touch me. They who see me will yearn to touch me, and they will eagerly reach forth their hands and die. The dead have no desire to enslave me. The living are not to be trusted. She sighed.
Thou art hard, Blue Rose, she said.
I have reason, mate of Annika.
Some day, mayhap, we will learn trust. It is not needful. The achievement of our goal doth not hinge upon it.
She sighed again and handed the box back to her husband.
Please go on, Zanisha. That shadow that was pestering Sparhawk and me was Zelasta, then? At first we thought it was Azash, and then, later on, the troll gods.
The shadow was Zelasta's mind, Queen of Alenia, Zanisha replied. A styric spell, known to very few, doth make it possible for him thus to observe and listen unseen.
I'd hardly call it unseen. I saw the edges of him every single time. It's a very clumsy spell.
That was Belium's doing. It sought to warn Annika of Zelasta's presence, by making him partially visible. Since one of the rings was on thy hand, the shadow of Zelasta's mind was also visible to thee.
She paused.
Zelasta was afeard,
she went on.
It was the design of the minions of Azash to lure Annika, with Belium in his grip, to go even unto Zemok, where Azash might take the jewel from him. Should that have come to pass, Zelasta's one hope of defeating Afriel and possessing Zephrenia would have been forever dashed. In truth, Annika, were all the impediments heaped in thy path to Zemok of Zelasta's devising?
I sort of wondered about that, Sparhawk mused. Martell was being inconsistent, and that wasn't at all like him. My brother was usually as single-minded as an avalanche. We thought it was the troll gods, though. They had plenty of reason not to want Belium to fall into the hands of Azash.
Zelasta wished thee to believe so, Annika. It was yet another means whereby he could conceal his own duplicity from Zephrenia, and her good opinion of him was most important. In short, thou didst win thy way through to Zemok, and didst destroy Azash there, along with diverse others.
We did that all right, Olaf murmured. Whole groups of diverses.
Then was Zelasta sore troubled,
Zanisha continued.
For Annika had come to full realization of his power to control Belium, and with that realization had he become as dangerous as any god. Zelasta could no more confront him than he could confront Avriel, and so it was that he went apart from all other men to consider his best course of action and to consult with certain outcasts of his acquaintance. The destruction of Azash had confirmed their surmise. Belium could, in fact, confront and destroy the gods. The means of the death of Afriel was at hand, could Zelasta but obtain it. That means, however, was in the hands of the most dangerous man on life. Clearly, if Zelasta wished to achieve his goal, he must needs ally himself with a god.
Seer gone, Colton guessed.
Even so, my protector. The elder gods of Styricum, as ye have discovered, were powerless by reason of their lack of worshippers. The troll gods were confined, and the Aline god was inaccessible, as was Edamus of the Delphae. The Tamil gods were too frivolous, and the god of the Aetons too inhospitable to save his own children. That left Sirgon, and Zelasta and his cohorts did immediately perceive a means by which he might strike a bargain with the god of the Sirgai. With Belium might Sirgon lift the Styric curse, which confined his children, and unleash them upon the world. In return, Zelasta believed, might Sirgon be persuaded to permit him to use Belium to destroy Afriel, or, at the very least, to raise it against Afriel with his own divine hand?
It would have been a reasonable basis for opening negotiations, Oscania conceded. I'd take that kind of bargain to the table and expect a hearing, at least.
Perhaps, Itania said dubiously, but you'd have to live long enough to get to the table first. I don't imagine that the appearance of a Styric in Sirga would have moved the population there to enthusiastic demonstrations of welcome.
It was, in truth, a perilous undertaking, Itania of Mytherium. By diverse means did Zelasta gain entrance into the temple of Sirgon, in the heart of the hidden city, and there did he confront the blazing spirit of Sirgon himself, and stay the god's vengeful hand with his offer of the liberation of the Sirgai. The enemies at once became allies, by reason of their mutual desires, and concluded they that Annika must be lured to Daresia, for in no wise would they risk confrontation with the god of the Alenes, whose power, derived from his countless worshippers, is enormous. Conceived they then their involuted plan to disrupt all of Tamali by insurrection and by apparition, so that the imperial government must seek aid, and Zelasta's position of trust would easily enable him to direct the attention of the government to Annika, and to suggest accommodation with the Church of Kyrellos. The apparitions to be raised were no great chore for Zelasta of Styricum and his outcast comrades, nor was the deceit whereby Sirgon persuaded the trolls that their gods commanded them to march across the polar ice to the north coast of Tamali, an impossible task for the god of the Sirgai. More central to their plans, however, were the insurrections which have so sorely marred the peace of Tamali in recent years. Insurrection, to be successful, must be tightly controlled. Spontaneous uprisings seldom succeed. History had persuaded Zelasta that central to the success of their plan would be the character and personality of he who would unite the diverse populations of the kingdoms of the Tamil Empire and fire them with his force and zeal.
Zelasta did not have far to seek to find such an one. Straight away upon his departure from Sirga did he journey to Arjuna, and there presented he his plan to one known as Scarpa.
Hold it, Strachan objected. Zelasta's plan involved high treason at the very least. It probably involved crimes they haven't even named as yet. Consorting with ye powers of darkness, and the like. How did he know he could trust Scarpa?
He had every reason, Strachan of Emsat, she replied. Zelasta knew that he could trust Scarpa as he could trust none other on life. Scarpa, you see, is Zelasta's own son.
Part 3. Zanisha. Chapter 21. Sophronia sat alone on the bed in her room. Her self-imposed isolation, she sadly concluded, would probably continue for the rest of her life. She had spoken in anger and haste, and this empty solitude was the consequence. She sighed. Sophronia of Ilara. It was strange that both Zanisha and Sedan had reached into the past for that archaic name, and stranger still that it should touch her heart so deeply. Ilara had not been much of a village, even by Styrix standards. Styrix had long sought to divert the hostility of Alines by posing as the poorest of the poor, living in hovels and wearing garments of the roughest homespun. But Ilara, with its single muddy street and clay and wattle huts, had been home. Sophronia's childhood there had been filled with love, and that love had reached its culmination with the birth of her sister. At the moment of Afriel's birth, Sophronia had found at once fulfillment and lifelong purpose. The memory of that small, rude village, and its warmth and all-encompassing love, had sustained her through dark days. Ilara, glowing in her memories, had always been a refuge to which she could retreat when the world and all its ugliness pressed in around her. But now it was gone. Zelasta's treachery had forever fouled and profaned her most precious memories. Now, whenever she remembered Ilara, Zelasta's face intruded itself. And now she saw his face for what it truly was, a mask of deceit and lust, and a vile hatred for the child goddess who was at the core of Sophronia's very being. Her memories had preserved Ilara. The revelation of Zelasta's corrupt duplicity had forever destroyed it. Sophronia buried her face in her hands and wept. Sparhawk and Vanyan found Princess Danae brooding alone in a large chair in a darkened room. "No," she replied emphatically to their urgent request, "I will not interfere."
"Afriel,"
Vanyan pleaded, with tears standing in his eyes.
"It's killing her."
"Then she'll just have to die. I can't help her. She has to do this by herself. If I tamper in any way at all, it won't mean anything to her. And I love her too much to coddle her and steal away the significance of what she's suffering."
"You don't mind if we try to help her, do you?" Sparhawk asked her tartly.
"You can try if you want, as long as you don't use Bellium."
"You're a very cruel little girl. Did you know that? I didn't really intend to raise a monster."
"You're not going to change my mind by calling me names, Sparhawk. And don't try to sneak around behind my back, either. You can hold her hand or give her flowers or kiss her into insensibility if you want, but leave the Bellium right where it is. Now go away and leave me alone. I'm not enjoying this."
And she curled up in her chair with her arms tightly wrapped around the battered Rollo and a look of ancient pain in her dark, luminous eyes.
"Zelasta's been interfering with us for a long time, hasn't he, Enere?"
Bevier asked the following morning, when they had gathered once again in the blue-draped sitting-room. They all wore more casual clothing now, and the long table against the far wall was set with a breakfast buffet. Queen Aelana had discovered a long time ago that meals did not necessarily have to interfere with important matters. Bevier's blue doublet was open at the front, and he was sunk low in his chair, with his legs stretched out in front of him.
"If he's behind that shadow and the cloud, That would almost have to mean that he was involved in the Zemach War, wouldn't it?
Zanisha nodded.
Zelasta's scheming is centuries old, Sir Knight. His passion for Sophrenia dates back to his childhood, as doth his hatred for Afriel, whose birth did dash all his hopes. Well he knew that should he confront the child goddess directly, she could will away his very existence with a single thought. He knew that his lust was unwholesome, and that no god would be inclined to aid him in his struggle with Afriel. Long he pondered this, and he concluded that his design required aid from some source with power, but without conscience or will of its own.
Belium, Sparhawk said, or at least that's how everyone saw it. We know differently now.
Truly,
she agreed.
Zelasta did share the common misperception of the jewel, thinking it to be a source of power only. He did believe that Belium, untouched by morality, would obey him without question, and that it would destroy his mortal enemy, and thus he could come to possess his heart's lust. For mistake me not, Zelasta sought possession of Sophrenia, not her love.
That's vile,
Baroness Melodier said with a shudder. Zanisha nodded her agreement.
Zelasta knew that he must needs have the rings to command the Sapphire Rose,
she went on.
But all of Styracum knew that the nimble child goddess herself had purloined the rings from Gwerig, the troll dwarf, to prevent the misshapen creature from raising Belium against the Styrix. Thus did Zelasta feign continuing friendship for Sophrenia and her sister, hoping to gain knowledge of the location of the rings, and thus the keys to Belium. Now the gods had known, and some few humans as well, that one day Belium's creature Annika would appear, and by diverse signs and auguries did they divine that he would be born of the House of Sparhawk. Afriel was wary, for she knew that the House of Sparhawk was Aline, and Alines are not kindly disposed towards Styracum. She knew, however, that one day Annika would come, and that he would raise Belium from the place where it had lain hidden, and wield it to his own purposes, and to the purposes of Belium itself. She was troubled by this, for should Annika share the common Aline despite of Styracum, might he raise the jewel against her worshippers? She sought to diminish that peril by separating the rings, placing one in the hands of Annika's ancestor and the other elsewhere, so that when the one ring descended to Annika, she might examine his heart and mind to determine whether it be safe to place both rings in his possession.
Stories are more exciting when you know the people involved, aren't they? Talon noted, filling his plate for the third time. Talon was growing again, and he ate almost constantly. He did, however, remember his manners well enough to take a plate of sliced fruit and a glass of milk to Zanisha before he sat down to gorge himself. Sparhawk phrased his question carefully. I seem to remember that you once told me that you can't hear the thoughts of the gods, Anaray. How is it that you knew what Afriel was thinking?
It is true that the thoughts of the gods are veiled from me, Annika, but Afriel hath few secrets from her sister, and it is from Sophrenia's memories that I have gleaned what I have told ye. Now,
she went on with her account,
Annika's ancestor was a Pendian knight, dwelling with his brethren in the mother house of his order in the city of Demas, in Alenia, and joined he in the war of the rash young knight Antor against certain rebellious barons. And it came to pass that the knight and the king, separated from their companions, lay sorely wounded on the bloody field of battle. As darkness fell upon that field, did Sophrenia of Ilara, commanded by her sister, come reluctantly to bind their wounds and to deliver up the rings, one to each of them. She did conceal the true import of the rings, advising them that they were but tokens of their friendship, and by means of a styric spell did she stain the rings with the mingled blood of the wounded pair, to conceal their true nature and import. Thus did she bind the two houses together, which binding did prepare the way for the union of Annika and his queen.
Aelana beamed smugly at her husband.
I told you so, she said.
I didn't quite follow that.
I told you that we were destined to marry. Why did you keep arguing with me?
It seemed like the thing to do. I was fairly sure you could have done better. It was a slightly flippant reply, and it concealed his shocked surprise. Obviously, Afriel was absolutely ruthless in her manipulation of people's lives. Annika was Belium's creature, and the child goddess, not certain she could trust him, had deliberately arranged to be born as his daughter so that she could in some measure control him.
Now Zelasta, perceiving the intent of Afriel, was troubled,
Zanisha went on.
He had hoped to wrest Belium from Annika before Annika could come to know the full import of his union with the stone. But Afriel had once again blocked his design. By virtue of the rings and the mastery of Belium which they conferred, had Annika been made invincible.
All right, then, Ulath rumbled. Zelasta was blocked. What did he do then?
There are some in Styracum, and ever have been, who, like the elder gods themselves, have used the power of the spells their race has learned to satisfy unwholesome personal desires. The younger gods are as children in this regard, and they cannot know the depths to which such as these will willingly sink. They are outraged by this coarser side of the nature of man, and such spirits as display it are cast out and accursed. These unfortunates dwell alone and sorrowing in wilderness and waste, or, all unrepentant, seek they their vile pleasure in the festering stews of the cities of this world. It was to these that Zelasta in desperation turned, and in Varel, foulest of the cities of southern Deconia, found he such a one as he sought.
I've lived in Varel, Myrtai said. That would be the place to look for degenerates, all right.
Zanisha nodded.
There, in that sink of iniquity, Zelasta did happen quite by chance upon one Ogorodjin, a corrupt and ancient voluptuary. Now this Ogorodjin was double-dipped in vileness, and by means of certain forbidden spells and enchantments had he reached into the darkness, yea, even into that ultimate corruption that lieth in the hearts of the elder gods. And Ogorodjin, perceiving that Zelasta's lust was like his own, and that they were therefore kindred, counseled him to seek out Otha of Zemok.
Bevier gasped.
Truly,
Zanisha agreed.
And so did Zelasta journey even unto the city of Zemok to make alliance with Otha.
Hold it, Kalton said. Didn't you tell us that Zelasta was trying to keep us away from Otha and Azash? She nodded.
Zelasta doth conclude alliances to further his own ends, not those of his allies. With Otha's aid he found other outcast Styrix in Eosia to aid him in keeping watch on the family of the Sparhawks, instructing them to seek out weaknesses which might be to his advantage when Annika was born. As well ye might guess, Afriel also set a watcher on those who would precede Sparhawk, and despite her sister's protests, the child goddess sent Sophrenia to Deimos to instruct the Aline Pandians in the secrets of Styracum.
Our charming little Afriel has a heartless streak, I see, Stegan noted. Considering what the Aline serfs in Astel did to Sophrenia's parents, sending her to Deimos smacks of a certain lack of consideration.
Who can know the mind of a god?
Zanisha sighed. She passed a weary hand across her eyes. Aren't you feeling well? Kalton asked, his voice mirroring his concern.
Some slight fatigue, Sir Kalton,
she confessed.
The mind of Sophrenia was in great turmoil when I did gather in her memories, and it is with no small difficulty that I wring some consistency from them.
Is that the way it works, Anoray? Sarabian asked curiously. You just reach in and swallow somebody else's mind whole?
Thy metaphor is inexact, Sarabian of Tamale, she said in a slightly reproving tone.
Forgive me, Anaray, he apologized. I plucked it out of the air. What I meant to ask was whether you absorb the entire contents of another's awareness and memories with a single touch.
Approximately, yes.
How many minds have you got stored away? Talon asked her. Other people's minds, I mean.
Close on to 1,000, young master.
She shrugged. Where do you find room? He paused, looking just a little embarrassed. I didn't say that very well, did I? What I was trying to ask was, doesn't it get awfully crowded in there?
The mind is limitless, young master.
Yours might be, Anaray, Colton smiled. I've found plenty of limits to mine, though.
Is Sophronia all right?
Vanyan asked her with a worried frown.
She is in great agony, Zenisha sighed. Zelasta's treachery hath wounded her to the heart, and her mistaken belief that all of ye have forsaken her hath crushed her spirit.
I'll go to her, Vanyan said, rising quickly to his feet.
No, my lord, Colton told him. That wouldn't be a good idea. You're too close to her, and if you went, you'd only make her feel worse. Why don't you let me go instead?
It's my place to go, Colton.
Not if it's going to make her suffer all the more, it isn't. Right now she needs to know that we still love her, and that means she needs somebody who's affectionate and not very bright. That's me, in case you hadn't noticed.
You stop that, Aileen flared. I won't have you saying things like that about yourself.
Then she seemed to realize that they were not alone, and she blushed and lowered her eyes in confusion.
He might be right, Vanyan,
Aelana said gravely.
Sir Colton may have his faults, but he's straightforward and honest. Sophronia knows that there's no deviousness in his nature. He's just too...
Stupid? Colton supplied.
That's not the word I'd have chosen.
It doesn't hurt my feelings, my queen. They don't pay me to think, just to follow orders. When I try to think, I get in trouble, so I've learned to get along without thinking. I just trust my feelings instead. They don't lead me off in the wrong direction too often. Sophronia knows me, and she knows I couldn't deceive her even if I tried.
It's called sincerity, my friend. Sparhawk smiled.
That's as good a word for it as any, I suppose.
Colton shrugged. I'll just nip on down to her room and smother her with sincerity. That ought to make her feel better.
It's me, Sophronia. Colton. Unlock the door.
Go away.
Her voice was muffled.
This is important.
Leave me alone.
Colton sighed. It was going to be one of those days.
Please, little mother.
He tried again.
Just go away.
If you don't open the door, I'll have to use magic on it.
Magic? You?
She laughed scornfully. Colton leaned back, raised his right leg, and drove his booted heel against the latch. He kicked it twice more, and the door splintered and burst open.
What are you doing? She screamed at him.
Haven't you ever seen Aileen magic before, little mother? He asked her mildly. We use it all the time. You don't mind if I come in, do you?
He stepped through the splinter-littered doorway. We thought you might be lonesome, and that maybe you needed somebody to yell at. Vanyan wanted to come, but I wouldn't let him.
You? Since when have you started ordering Vanyan around?
I'm bigger than he is, and younger.
You get out of my room.
I'm sorry, but I can't do that.
He glanced toward her window. You've got a nice view from here. You can see all the way down to the harbor. Shall we get started?
Screaming and hitting are all right, but please don't turn me into a toad. Aileen wouldn't like that.
Who sent you here, Colton?
I already told you. It was my own idea. I wouldn't let Vanyan come because you're upset right now. You might say something to him that you'd both regret later. You can say anything you want to me, Sophronia. You can't hurt my feelings.
Go away.
No, I won't do that. Would you like to have me make you a nice cup of tea?
Just leave me alone.
I already told you no. Then he took her by the shoulders and enfolded her in a huge bear hug. She struggled against him, but he was absolutely immovable.
Your hair smells nice, he noted.
She began to pound on his shoulders with her fists.
I hate you.
No, you don't, he replied calmly. You couldn't hate me even if you wanted to.
He continued to hold her.
It's been very mild this autumn, hasn't it?
Please leave me alone, Colton.
No.
She started to cry, clutching at his doublet and burying her face in his chest.
I'm so ashamed,
she wept.
Of what? You didn't do anything wrong. Zelasta tricked you, that's all. He tricked the rest of us as well, so you're no more to blame than we are.
I've broken Vanyan's heart.
Oh, I don't think so. Not really. You know Vanyan. He can endure almost anything.
The storm of her weeping continued, which was more or less what Colton had in mind. He pulled a handkerchief out of the sleeve of his doublet and gave it to her, still not relaxing his embrace.
I'll never be able to face them again, she wailed.
Who? You mean the others? Of course you will. You made a fool of yourself, that's all. Everybody does that now and then.
How dare you?
She began to pound on him again. Colton really wished she'd get past that part of it.
It's true, though, isn't it? He said gently. Nobody's blaming you, but it's true all the same. You did what you thought was right, but it turned out to be wrong. Everybody's wrong sometimes, you know. There aren't any perfect people.
I'm so ashamed.
You already said that. Are you sure you wouldn't like a nice cup of tea?
You should rest now, Anna Ray, Sarabian said solicitously. I hadn't realized how exhausting this would be for you. She smiled at him.
Thou art kind, Sarabian of Tamale, but I am not so fragile as that. Let us proceed. It had been in the mind of Zelasta that he might by diverse inducements corrupt Annika in his youth, and thus gain access to Belium without the need for perilous confrontation. But Sophrenia and Afriel did closely attend the childhood and youth of Belian's champion, once again, and all unknowingly, thwarting Zelasta's design. Then did Zelasta conclude that he had no choice but to approach Annika as an enemy rather than a convert, and consulted he with Ogorodjan and with Otha, and went he even to Simura to seek allies to assist him. In furtherance of this, did he pose as one of the numerous Zemach Styrix Otha had sent into the Aline kingdoms to sow dissension and turmoil.
There were plenty of those, all right, Ulaf said. Rumor had it that a Zemach Styrix could give an Aline anything he wanted, provided that the Aline wasn't too attached to his soul.
The blandishments such Styrix offered were many,
Zanisha agreed.
But the understanding of Otha's agents was limited.
Profoundly limited, Vanyan agreed.
Truly. Zelasta, however, was more subtle and far more patient. He did find an apt pupil in the person of the young chaplain to the royal house of Alenia, a priest named Anias.
Anias? Elana exclaimed. I didn't know that he was ever the royal chaplain.
It was before you were born, Sparhawk told her.
That would explain why he had so much control over my father. Are you saying that Zelasta was behind all that, Anare?
Zanisha nodded.
It isn't really all that easy to corrupt a young priest, Bevier objected. They're usually filled with zeal and idealism.
And Anias was no exception,
Zanisha replied.
He was ambitious, but in his youth, was he ever true to the ideals of his church? That idealism stood in Zelasta's path until he found means to wear it away.
She paused, flushing slightly.
I would not offend thee, Majesty,
she apologized to Elana.
But thine aunt was ever lustful and wanton.
It doesn't offend me in the slightest, Anare,
Elana replied.
Orisa's appetites were legendary in Zamora, and I was never really all that fond of her in the first place.
There was some connection, then? Melodir asked.
Indeed, Baroness,
Zanisha replied.
Princess Orisa was the means whereby Zelasta recruited Anias to his cause. Well schooled by the voluptuary Ogorajin, did Zelasta introduce the wanton princess to...
She broke off, blushing furiously.
You needn't go into detail, Zanisha,
Elana told her.
We all knew Orisa. There was nothing she wouldn't do. In truth, she was an apt pupil,
Zanisha agreed.
Now Zelasta concluded that Anias would be useful to him by reason of his position as advisor to thy father. Thus did he implant the firm belief in the mind of thy corrupt aunt that no act could be so vile as the seduction of a young priest. That notion, once implanted, did obsess Orisa, and ere long it bore fruit. In her 12th year did Orisa steal away the dubious virtue of thy father's chaplain.
At the age of 12?
Melodir murmured.
She was precocious, wasn't she? Then Anias was consumed with remorse,
Zanisha continued. Anias? Elana scoffed. He didn't know what the word meant.
You may be wrong there, my queen, Vanyan disagreed. I knew Anias when he was a young man. He seemed committed to the principles of the church. It wasn't until later that he began to change. Sparhawk's father and I always wondered what had happened to him.
Evidently, Orisa happened,
Elana said dryly. She pursed her lips. Then Zelasta gained access to Anias by means of my aunt? She guessed. Zanisha nodded.
The young priest, after much prayer and meditation, did resolve to renounce his vows and to wed the tarnished princess.
A marriage made in heaven, Ulath noted sardonically.
Orisa, however, would have none of such union, for so insatiable was her nature that she soon grew tired of her ecclesiastical paramour and did taunt him by reason of his waning prowess and stamina. At Zelasta's insinuating suggestion, however, did she bring her exhausted convert to a certain house in Zamora, and there did Zelasta hint that he might restore the waning vigor of Anias by means of styric enchantments. Thus did he secure a firm grip on the soul of he who would become primate of Zamora.
We knew that Anias was getting help from one of Otha's styrics, Sparhawk said. We had no idea it was Zelasta, though. He had a hand in virtually everything, didn't he?
He is most clever, Annika. Patiently did he instruct his two ever more willing pupils in that depravity which he himself had learned under the tutelage of Ogorajin of Varel. The royal chaplain was central to his plan, but first was it necessary to corrupt him beyond all hope of redemption.
He did that part of it well enough, Elana said bleakly.
Step by step did Orisa, guided by Zelasta, lead the chaplain down and down, until all semblance of decency had been washed from him. Then it was that the styric proposed the ultimate degeneracy, that the lustful princess, aided by her now equally foul paramour, should seduce thy father, her brother, and when he should be wholly in her thrall, should she broach the idea of incestuous marriage to him. Zelasta did well know that Annika's father would resist such abomination to the death, and hoped he thereby to separate the house of Sparhawk from the royal house of Alenia. Reckoned he not, however, upon the iron will of the Sparhawks, nor the weakness of King Aldrius. The elder Sparhawk compelled thy father to wed another, but in truth had Zelasta's goal been achieved. A breach had been opened between the two houses.
But we've healed that breach, haven't we, Sparhawk?
Elana said with a warm smile.
Frequently, he replied.
What can I do?
Sophrenia wailed, wringing her hands.
You can stop doing that, for one thing,
Carlton told her, gently separating her hands.
I found out a little while ago just how sharp your fingernails are, and I don't want you tearing off your skin.
She looked guiltily at the fresh scratches on his face.
I hurt you, didn't I, dear one?
It's nothing. I'm used to bleeding.
I've treated Vanyan so badly,
she mourned.
He'll never forgive me, and I love him.
Then tell him so. That's all you really have to do, you know. Just tell him how you feel about him. Say you're sorry, and everything will go back to being the way it was before.
It won't ever be the same.
Of course it will. As soon as you two are back together, Vanyan will forget it ever happened.
He took her two small hands in his great ones, turned them over, and kissed her palms.
That's what love's all about, little mother. We all make mistakes. The people who love us forgive the mistakes. The people who won't forgive don't really matter, now do they?
Well, no, but...
There aren't any buts, Sophrenia. It's so simple that even I can understand it. Aileen and I trust our feelings, and it seems to work out fairly well. You don't really need complicated logic when it comes to something as simple as love.
You're such a good man, Carlton.
That embarrassed him a bit.
Hardly, he replied ruefully. I drink too much and I eat too much. I'm not very refined, and I usually can't follow even a simple thought from one end to the other. God knows I've got faults, but Aileen knows about them and forgives them. She knows that I'm just a soldier, so she doesn't expect too much from me. Are you just about ready for that cup of tea?
That would be nice.
She smiled.
Now that comes as a real surprise, Vanyan said. But why Martell?
Zelasta did perceive that of all the Pandians, Martell came closest to being a match for Annika,
Zanisha replied.
And Martell's hunger for the forbidden secrets provided Zelasta with an opening. The Styrik did pose as an unlettered and greedy Zemach, and did accept Martell's gold with seeming eagerness. Thus did he beguile the arrogant young Pandian, until there was no turning back for him.
And all this time he was posing as Otha's emissary? Evier asked her.
Yes, Sir Knight. He served Otha's design so long as it suited him, but his heart and mind remained his own. Truly did he corrupt Primate Anias and the Pandian Martell for his own ends, which did ever center upon that day when Annika would lift Belium from the place where it lay hidden.
But it wasn't Annika who lifted it, Anaray. It was Afriel, and none of Zelasta's scheming could have taken that into account. They all turned quickly at the sound of the familiar voice. Sophrenia, her face still drawn, stood in the doorway with Carlton hovering behind her.
Zelasta might possibly have been able to take the stone from Sparhawk, but not Afriel. That's where everything fell apart on him. He couldn't bring himself to believe that anyone, even a god, would willingly surrender Belium to someone else. Maybe someday I'll explain it to him. I have seen into the mind of Zelasta, Sophrenia of Ilara,
Zanisha told her.
He could not comprehend such an act.
I'll make him understand, Anaray, Sophrenia replied in a bleak voice.
I have this group of big savage Alines who love me, or so they say. I'm sure that if I ask them nicely enough, they'll beat that understanding into Zelasta.
And she smiled a wan little smile. Chapter 22 Aelana rose from her chair, went to Sophrenia, and kissed her palms in greeting. Sparhawk often marveled at how his young wife instinctively knew the right thing to do. "We've missed you, little mother," she said simply. "Are you feeling better now?" A faint smile touched Sophrenia's lips.
"Exactly how do you define better, Aelana?"
She looked closely at the blonde queen.
"You're not getting enough sleep."
You look a bit drawn yourself, Aelana replied.
I suppose we both have reason enough.
Oh, yes.
Sophronia looked around at the slightly apprehensive faces of her friends.
Oh, stop that, she told them. I'm not going to throw a fit. I behaved badly.
She reached up and fondly touched Colton's cheek.
My overbearing friend here tells me that it doesn't matter, but I'd still like to apologize.
You had plenty of reason to be upset, Sparhawk told her. We were very abrupt with you.
That's no excuse, dear one.
She drew in a deep breath, squared her shoulders, and crossed the room to Zanisha with the air of one about to perform an unpleasant duty.
We don't really have any reason to be fond of each other, Anaray, she said, but we should at least be civil. I wasn't. I'm sorry. Thy courage becomes thee, Sophronia of Ilara. I do confess that I would be hard-pressed thus to admit a fault to an enemy.
Exactly what did Sir Colton do to bring you around, Lady Sophronia? Sarabian asked curiously. You were in absolute despair. And Colton wouldn't have been my first choice as a comforter.
That's because you don't know him, Sarabian. His heart is very large, and he demonstrates his affection in a very direct way. He kicked my door down and smothered me into submission.
She thought about it for a moment.
About all he really did was wrap his arms around me and tell me that he loved me. He kept saying it over and over again, and every time he said it, it struck me right to the heart. Baleens are very good bullies. I screamed at him for a while, and then I tried hitting him, but hitting Colton is sort of like pounding on a brick. I even tried crying. I've always had good luck with crying, but all he did was offer to make me a cup of tea.
She shrugged.
After a while, I realized that he was going to continue to love me no matter what I did, and that I was making a fool of myself. So, here I am.
She smiled at Aileen.
I don't know if you realize it, dear, but you may just be the luckiest woman in the world. Don't let him get away.
No fear of that, Lady Sophronia, the soft-eyed girl responded with a rosy blush. Sophronia looked around, suddenly all business.
I'm sure we have more important things to discuss than my recent temper tantrum. Have I missed much?
Oh, not really, dear sister, Stragan drawled. About all we've discovered so far is that Zelasta's been responsible for nearly every catastrophe in human history since the fall of man. We don't have quite enough evidence to implicate him in that yet. We're a-workin' on it, though, Kalidor added.
Sparhawk briefly summarized what Zanisha had told them of the hidden side of Zelasta. Sophronia was startled to learn that it had been Zelasta who had corrupted Martell.
I'm not trying to be offensive, dear sister, Stragan said, but it seems to me that the younger gods weren't quite firm enough in dealing with these renegade Styrix. They seem to lend themselves to just about every bit of mischief that comes along. Something a bit more permanent than banishment might have been a better solution.
The younger gods wouldn't do that, Stragan.
Pity, he murmured. That sort of leaves it up to us, doesn't it? We've got a group of people out there who are highly skilled at causing trouble.
His expression grew sly.
Here's a notion, he said. Why don't you have somebody draw up a list of names and give it to me? I'll see to it that the secret government takes care of all the messy details. We wouldn't even need to bother the younger gods or the rest of Styricum about it. You propose, and I'll dispose. Call it a personal favor, if you like.
You're a depraved man, Stragan.
Yes, I thought you might have noticed that.
What did Zelasta do after Sparhawk destroyed Azash? Talon asked Zanisha. Didn't that teach him that he'd be wiser to stay clear of our friend here?
He was much chagrined, young master. Annika had demolished decades of patient labor in a single night. And with Belian firmly in his grasp, he was more dangerous than ever. Zelasta's hopes of wresting the jewel from him were dashed, and he fled from Zemok in rage and disappointment.
And when he ran away, he missed seeing Sparhawk throw Belian into the sea, the boy added. So far as he knew, Sparhawk still had it in his pocket. She nodded.
Returned he to Varel to consult with Ogorajin,
and diverse other renegades concerning this disastrous turn of events.
How many of them are there, lady? Colton asked. And what are they like? It's always good to know your enemies.
They are many, Sir Colton. But four, in addition to Zelasta and Ogorajan, are most significant. They are the most powerful and corrupt in all of Styricum. Ogorajan is by far the foulest, but his powers are waning by reason of a loathsome disease which doth eat away at his mind.
Zanisha suddenly looked uncomfortable, and even she blushed.
It is one of those ailments which do infect those who engage overmuch in bawdry.
Ah, Sarabian came to her aid. I don't know that we need to get too specific about Ogorajan's disease. Why don't we just say that he's incapacitated and let it go at that? Who are the others, Enere? She gave him a grateful look.
Sizada of Issos is the most versed in the darker aspects of Styric magic, Emperor Sarabian, she replied. Residing close by the eastern frontier of Zemok, he had frequent contacts with the half-Styric, half-Aline wizards of that accursed land, and did he learn much from them. Reaches he with some facility into the darkness which did surround the mind of Azash, and he can summon certain of the creatures which served the Elder God.
Damorks, Barret asked. Seekers?
The Damorkim perished with their master, Sir Knight. The fate of the Seekers is uncertain. Sizada fears to summon such as they, for only Otha could surely control them.
That's something, anyway, Khalad said. I've heard some stories that I'd rather not have to confirm in person.
In addition to Sizada, Zelasta and Ogorajan have allied themselves with Pataga of Jura, Enak of Lidros, and Jarian of Samar,
Zanisha continued.
I've heard of them, Sophrenia said darkly.
I wouldn't have believed Zelasta could sink so low.
Bad? Colton asked her.
Worse than that. Pataga is a master of illusion who can blur the line between reality and imagining. It's said that he conjures up the images of various women for the pleasure of the degenerates who pay him, and that the images are even better than reality could be.
Evidently he's branching out, Oscania noted.
It would appear that he's creating the illusions of monsters now, instead of pretty ladies.
That would explain all the vampires and the like.
Enak's reputed to be the most contentious man alive,
Sophrenia went on.
He can start centuries-long feuds between families just by walking past their houses. He's probably behind the upsurge of racial hatred that's contaminating the Aline kingdoms to the west. Jarian is probably the preeminent necromancer in the world. It's said that he can raise people who never even really existed.
Whole armies? Uloth asked her. Like those antique Lamworks, or the Seer guy?
I doubt it,
she replied,
although I can't be sure. It was the Lasta who told us it was impossible, and he may have been lying.
I've got a question, Anaray, Talon said. Can you see what Zelasta's thinking, as well as hear it?
To some degree, young master.
What are you getting at, Talon? Sparhawk asked him.
You remember that spell you used to put Krager's face in that basin of water back in Platymi's cellar in Zamora? Sparhawk nodded. A name's just a name, Talon noted. And these particular Styrics probably aren't running around announcing themselves. Stragan suggested getting rid of them earlier. Wouldn't pictures make that a lot easier? If Zanisha can see Zelasta's memories of what those people look like, and let me see them too, I could draw pictures of them. Then Stragan could send the pictures to Varel, or wherever those Styrics are, and Zelasta would suddenly lose some people he's been counting on rather heavily. I think we owe him that much anyway.
I like the way this boy thinks, Sparhawk,
Uloth grinned.
Thy plan is flawed, young master,
Zanisha said to Talon.
The spell of which thou didst speak is a Styric spell, and I have no familiarity with it.
Sophrenia could teach it to you, he shrugged. You're asking the impossible, Talon, Evie told him.
Sophrenia and Zanisha have only recently reached the point where they can be in the same room without wanting to kill each other.
There's a lot of trust involved in teaching and learning spells. Zanisha and Sophronia, however, had been exchanging a long, troubled look.
Don't be too quick to throw away a good idea, Bevier,
Sophronia murmured.
It has got some possibilities, Anaray,
she suggested tentatively.
The notion probably makes your skin crawl, as much as it does mine. But if we could ever learn to trust each other, there could be all manner of things we might be able to accomplish. If we could combine your magic with mine...
She left it hanging. Zanisha pursed her lips, and her expression oddly mirrored Sophronia's. So intense was her consideration of the notion that her control slipped a bit, and her face began to glow.
The alliance between our two races did almost bring the Seer Guy to their knees, she noted,
also rather tentatively.
In diplomatic circles, this is the point at which the negotiators usually adjourn so that they can consult with their governments,
Oscania suggested.
The Anaray and I aren't obliged to get instructions from either Sarsos or Delphaeus, Your Excellency,
Sophronia told him. Most diplomats aren't either. He shrugged.
The announcement, I must consult with my government, is merely a polite way of saying, your suggestion is interesting. Give me some time to think it over and get used to the idea. You ladies are breaking new ground. I'd advise you not to rush things. What say you, Sophronia of Ilara?
Zanisha said, smiling shyly.
Shall we pause for a fictional consultation with Sarsos and Delphaeus? That might not be such a bad idea, Zanisha of Delphaeus,
Sophronia agreed.
As long as we both know that it's fiction, we won't have to waste time waiting for non-existent messengers to make imaginary journeys before we speak of it again. After the destruction of the city of Zemok and all who dwelt there, did Zelasta and his cohorts meet in Varel to consider their course?
Zanisha picked up the story after a brief recess.
Concluded they at once that they were no match for Annika and Belium. It was Ogorajan who did point out that Zelasta's tentative alliance had been with Otha, and that there had been no direct contact with Azash. He did speak slightingly to Zelasta concerning this, and Zelasta's rancor regarding those words doth linger still.
That's always useful, Vengen observed. Dissension among your enemies can usually be exploited.
The presence of the contentious Enak doth heighten their discord, Lord Vengen. Ogorajin did berate Zelasta, demanding to know if he were so puffed up as to think himself the equal of a god, for Ogorajin doth consider Annika to be such, or very nearly, because of his access to Belium.
How does it feel to be married to a god, Elana?
Sarabian teased.
It has its moments,
she smiled.
Sazada of Issos then joined their discussion,
Zanisha continued.
He did rather slyly suggest alliance with one or more of the myriad demigods of the netherworld, but his companions trusted him not, for he alone is conversant with the Zemok spells which do raise and control such creatures of darkness. Indeed, trust is slight in that unwholesome company. Zelasta hath placed the ultimate prize before them, and well doth he know that each of them doth secretly covet sole possession of the jewel. Theirs is an uneasy alliance at best.
What did they finally decide to do, Anaray?
Kring asked. Sparhawk had noticed that the Domi seldom spoke at these meetings. Kring was not really comfortable indoors, and the subtleties of politics that so delighted Elana and Sarabian quite obviously bored him. Paloi politics were straightforward and simple, and usually involved bloodshed.
It was the consensus of their deliberations that they might find, for a price, willing helpers in the imperial government itself,
Zanisha replied. They were right about that, Sarabian said sourly. If what we saw yesterday is any indication, my ministers were standing in line to betray me.
It wasn't really personal, my emperor, Oscania assured him. We were betraying each other, not you.
Did anyone ever approach you?
Several, actually. They couldn't offer me anything I really wanted, though.
Truth in politics, Oscania? His brother asked in feigned astonishment. Aren't you setting a bad precedent?
Grow up, Itania, Oscania told him. Haven't you learned by now that you can't deceive Sarabian? He claims to be a genius, and he's probably very close to being right, or will be as soon as we peel away his remaining illusions.
Isn't that a blunt sort of thing to say, Oscania? Sarabian asked pointedly. I'm right here, you know.
Why, so you are, Your Majesty, Oscania replied with exaggerated astonishment. Isn't that amazing?
Sarabian laughed. What can I do? He said to Elana. I need him too much to even object. Why didn't you tell me about this, Oscania?
It happened when you were still feigning stupidity, Your Majesty. I didn't want to wake you. I may have met this Enoch you've been talking about, Anaray. One of the men who approached me was Styric, and I've never met a more disagreeable individual. I've come across goats who smelled better, and the fellow was absolutely hideous. His eyes looked off in different directions, and his teeth were broken and rotting, and they all seemed to stick straight out. He looked like a man with a mouthful of brown icicles.
Thy description doth closely match Zelasta's memories of him.
That one shouldn't be too orful horde to find, Stragan, Kalidor drawled. I can send word to Varel if and you want. This year Wynak ain't likely to be missed much if and he's as unpleasant as the foreign minister says.
Zenisha looked puzzled.
It's a pose that amuses my colleague, Anaray, Stragan apologized. He likes to put on the airs of a yokel. He says it's for the purposes of concealment, but I think he does it just to irritate me.
Thine leans are droll and frolicsome, Sophrenia of Ilara,
Zenisha said.
I know, Anaray, Sophrenia sighed. It's one of the burdens I bear.
Sophrenia, Stragan protested mildly.
How did you put this fellow off without getting a knife in your back, Your Excellency? Talon asked Oscania. Declining that sort of offer is usually fatal.
I told him that the price wasn't right, Oscania shrugged. I said that if he could come up with a better offer, I might be interested.
Very good, Your Excellency, Kalidor said admiringly. What kind of reason did he give you for making the offer in the first place?
He was a bit vague about it. He hinted about some kind of large-scale smuggling operation, and said that he could use the help of the Foreign Service to smooth the way in various kingdoms outside Tamale. He hinted that he'd already bought off the Interior Ministry and the Customs Branch of the Chancellery of the Exchequer.
He was lying, Your Excellency, Stragan told him. There isn't that much money to be made in smuggling. It's a big risk for short pay.
I rather thought so myself. Oscania leaned back, stroking his chin thoughtfully. This group of Styrics down in Varel may think they're very worldly, but they're like children when compared to real criminals and international businessmen. They cooked up a story that wasn't really very convincing. What they actually wanted was access to the government and the power of the various ministries in order to use that power to overthrow the government itself. The government had to be on the brink of collapse in order to get me to run off to Eosia to beg Prince Sparhawk to come here and save us.
It worked, didn't it? Itania said bluntly.
Well, yes, I suppose it did, but it was so clumsy. I'd personally be ashamed to accept such a shoddy victory. It's a matter of style, Itania. Any amateur can blunder into occasional triumph. The true professional controls things well enough not to have to trust luck.
They adjourned for the night not long after that. Sparhawk watched Sophrenia and Vanyan rather closely as everyone filed out. The two of them exchanged a few tentative glances, but neither seemed ready to break the ice. They gathered again the following morning, and Talon and Calton seemed to be competing to see which of them could eat the most for breakfast. After a bit of casual conversation, they got down to business again.
Right after the attempted coup here in Mithurin, Krager paid me a visit, Sparhawk told Zanisha.
Was he telling the truth when he said that Sirgan's involved in this? She nodded.
Sirgan hath much reason to hate the Styrix and their gods, she replied. The curse which hath imprisoned his Sirgai for 10 aeons hath enraged him beyond all measure. The outcast Styrix in Varel did share his hatred, for they too had been punished.
She reflected a moment.
We all have reason to hate Zelasta, she said, but we cannot question his courage. It was at peril of his life that he did carry the proposal of the renegades to the hidden city of Sirga to place it before Sirgan himself. The proposal was simple. By means of Belium could the curse be lifted, and the Sirgai loosed once more upon this world. The Styrix could be crushed, which would please both Sirgan and the outcasts. The Sirgai would come to dominate the world, with positions of honor and power reserved for Ogorajin and his friends, and Afriel would be destroyed, thus giving possession of Sifrinia to Zelasta.
Something for everybody, Sarabian said dryly.
So thought Ogorajin and Zelasta,
Zanisha agreed.
They had, however, reckoned not upon the nature of Sirgan. They soon found that he would, in no wise, consent to the secondary role they had in mind for him. Sirgan doth command, he doth not follow. He did set his high priest, one Akatis, over his new allies, telling them that Akatis spoke for him in all things. Zelasta did secretly laugh at the god's simplicity, thinking that the high priest Akatis would, like all the Sirgai, die with the step which took him over the unseen line in the sand. Akatis, however, had no need of crossing the line. With Sirgan's aid did he travel with his mind, not his body, that he might observe and direct without leaving Sirga. Truly the mind of Akatis can reach across vast distances, not only to convey the will of Sirgan, but to advise the diverse cohorts of what hath occurred elsewhere.
That explains how the word that we were coming got from one end of Seneska to the other so fast, Vivier said. We sort of wondered how they were keeping ahead of us.
Now,
Zanisha pressed on,
though they are outcast and despised, Ogorajin and the others are still Styrix, and the Styrix are not a warlike people. Their efforts had concentrated on deception and misdirection previously. Sirgan, however, is a war god, and he did command them to raise armies to confront the Aetons, who are the strong arm of the Empire. Then were the outcasts of Varel nonplussed, for Sirgan gave the command, but no guidance. Zelasta, who had traveled much in Eosia, did suggest to Akatis that Sirgan might deceive the trolls and bring them to northern Tamale, and Sirgan did readily consent. Still, he demanded more. Enak of Lidros, who doth ever carry that cloud of dissension with him, could fan the fires of discontent in all of Tamale. But so contentious is his nature that none would willingly follow him. Armies require generals, and Styrix are not gifted in that profession. I do not say this to give offense, Sifrinia,
she added quickly. Both Zanisha and Sifrinia were being very careful with each other.
I'm not offended, Zanisha. I like soldiers, mind you.
Her eyes flickered toward Vanyan.
Some of them, anyway. But I really think the world might be a nicer place without them.
Bite your tongue, Olaf told her. If we couldn't be soldiers, we'd all have to go out and find honest work.
Zanisha smiled.
It was in desperation, for Sirgan did grow impatient, that Zelasta did journey to Arjuna to enlist his son Scarpa in the enterprise. Now Scarpa was unlike his father, in that he did willingly, even eagerly, resort to violence. His years as a performer in shabby carnivals had taught him the skills of swaying crowds of people by eloquence and by his commanding presence. His profession, however,
was held in low regard, and this did pain him deeply, for Scarpa hath an exalted opinion of himself.
He does indeed, little lady, Calidore agreed. If what the thieves of Arjuna tell me is anywhere close to being accurate, Scarpa probably believes that he could fly or walk on water if he just set his mind to it.
Truly, she agreed, he hath, moreover, a deep contempt for the gods, and a profound hatred of women.
That's not uncommon among bastards, Strachan said clinically. Some of us blame our mothers, or our gods, for our social unacceptability. Fortunately, I never fell into that trap. But then I'm so witty and charming that I didn't have the usual inadequacies to try to explain away.
I hate it when he does that, Baroness Melodir said.
It's only a plain fact, my dear Baroness. He grinned at her. False modesty is so unbecoming, don't you think?
Be clever on your own time, Strachan, Elana chided. Did Zelasta tell his son all the details of this conspiracy, Enare?
Yes, your majesty. Given the nature of the two, there was surprising candor between them. Scarpa, however, was very young, and had an exaggerated notion of his own cleverness. Zelasta did quickly realize that the rudimentary steric spells which he had imparted to his son during his infrequent visits to Arjuna might serve to deceive rural bumpkins, but they would scarce be adequate for the business at hand. Therefore took he his son to Varel to place him under the tutelage of Ogorajin.
When was this, Anore? Calidore asked curiously.
Perhaps 5 years since, Master Calidore.
Then it fits together with what we found out. It was almost exactly 5 years ago that Scarpa disappeared from Arjuna. Then a couple of years later he came back and started stirring up trouble.
It was a short education, Zanisha said, but Scarpa hath a quick mind. In truth, it was his tutor who did suspend his training, for Ogorajin was much offended by the young man's arrogance.
This Scarpa sounds like the sort you have to stand in line to hate, Talon noted. I've never met him, and I already dislike him.
Zelasta was also taken somewhat aback by his son's abrasive nature,
Zanisha told them,
and thinking to awe him into some measure of civility, he did take him to Sirga, that he might come to know their master. Sirgan did question the young man closely, and then, evidently satisfied, did he instruct him in the task before him. Scarpa came away with no more respect for the god of the Sirgai than he had felt ere they met, and Zelasta hath lost what small regard he previously had for his son. It is now in his mind that should their conspiracy succeed, Scarpa will not long survive the victory.
She paused.
And it pleased thee to view it so, Sophrenia. Thy vengeance hath already had its beginning. Zelasta is a hollow man, with no god, and with none in all the world to love him or to call him friend. Even the scant affection he had for his son is now withered, and he is empty and alone.
Two great tears welled up in Sophrenia's eyes, but then she angrily dashed them away with the back of her hand. It's not enough, Anore, she said adamantly.
You've spent too much time with Aline's, little mother, Sarabian said.
That startled Sparhawk just a bit. He could not be sure if the brilliant, erratic Tamil Emperor used that affectionate term deliberately, or if it had been a slip of the tongue.
Who recruited the others, Anore? Venian asked,
smoothly moving away from a slightly touchy situation.
It was Scarpa, Lord Vanyan, she replied. Sirgan had directed him to seek out confederates to stir rebellion in western Tamale, thus to bar the way should Annika come with the armies of the church, for Sirgan would not willingly pit his cherished Sirgai against such as you. Now Scarpa did know a certain out-at-the-elbows Dacite nobleman, who, plagued by gambling debts and the ungentle urgings of his creditors to settle accounts, did flee from Deconia and conceal himself for a time in the very Arjunai carnival where Scarpa did practice his dubious art. This scruffy nobleman, Baron Perak by name, did Scarpa seek out on his return home from Sirga. Perak, desperate out of all measure, soon willingly fell in with his former associate, for the inducements Scarpa offered were enticing. Consulted then the unscrupulous pair with the debauched Styrix at Varel, and followed their counsel to seek out the merchant Amador in Edom and the poet Elron in Astel, both men being much taken with themselves and resentful of the station in life which fate had assigned them.
Bevier was frowning. We've encountered both of them, Amaray, and neither one strikes me as a natural leader. Were they the best Scarpa could find?
Their selection was determined by their willingness to cooperate, Sir Knight. The ability to sway men with words, and that commanding presence which doth draw all eyes, can be elevated by certain Styrix spells. Unimpressive though they are, it was the quality of desperation in them which Scarpa did seek. Both Amador and Elron suffered agonies by reason of their insignificance, and both were willing, even eager, to go to any lengths to exalt themselves.
"We see it all the time in Thalesia, Bevier," Ulof explained. "We call it the little man's complaint. Even Wargenson's a perfect example. He'd rather die than be ignored."
"Amador's not all that short," Talon pointed out.
"There are all kinds of littleness, Talon," Ulof said. "How did Count Garrick in Lamorkand get involved, Anaray? And why?"
"He was recruited by Scarpa on Zelasta's instruction, Sir Ulof. Zelasta thought to stir discord and turmoil on the Eosian continent, to persuade the Church of Kyrellos that her interests required that Annika be dispatched to Tamale to seek out the roots of the disturbances. Of all of them, only Zelasta hath his feet planted on both continents, and only he doth understand the thinking of thy church. In truth, Elron and Amador are but pawns, knowing little of the true scope of the enterprise they have joined. Baron Perak is more knowledgeable, but he is still not privy to all their designs. Count Garrick is peripheral. He follows his own purposes, which only occasionally match the purposes of his colleagues here in Tamale."
"You almost have to admire them," Kalador said. "This is the most complicated and well-organized swindle I've ever heard of."
"But it all fell apart when Zanisha opened the door to Zelasta's mind," Colton said. "As soon as we found out that he's been on the other side all along, the whole thing began to crumble."
He thought of something. "How did Krager get mixed up in this?"
"Count Garrick did suggest him to Scarpa," Zanisha replied. "Garrick had found the one called Krager useful in times past."
"Yes," Ulof said. "We saw him being useful outside the walls of Baron Alstrom's castle in Lamorkand. Martell's still coming back to haunt us, isn't he, Sparhawk?"
"How much did my Minister of the Interior and the other traitors really know about all of this, Anaray?" Sarabian asked.
"Almost nothing, Majesty. In the main, they did believe that their activities were but a part of the ongoing struggle between Foreign Minister Oscania and Interior Minister Colata. Colata offered them profit, and so they did follow him."
"Ordinary palace politics, then," Sarabian mused. "I suppose I'll have to keep that in mind at their trials. They weren't really disloyal, only corrupt."
"All except for Colata, Your Majesty," Itania noted. "His involvement had to have gone deeper than simple garden-variety political bickering, wouldn't it?"
"Colata was a dupe, Itania of Mytherium," Zanisha corrected. "It was Teoven who was ever Zelasta's man at court. It was to him that the one called Krager did bring Zelasta's instruction, and Teoven did tell Colata only so much as it was needful for him to know."
End of Side 9. To continue, turn the cassette over.